A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 15. Echoila. Mosentha was so neat and tidy that it set Din's teeth on edge. He hated it immediately. It wasn't quite as bad as the ordered blocks of cities on core worlds or the manicured grounds of mid-rim palaces, but Mosentha was too tidy for Tatooine and Din didn't trust it. He'd brought the fly to cut out desert travel, turning a 5-day slog across the sands into a 2-hour trip in sublight, and left the ship in the care of 3 polished silver droids who managed a small public shipyard called Katoonies, and gritted his teeth. This, Din thought, surveying the city, is going to be a challenge. He'd lingered at the palace for another 2 days before setting off for Mos Entha. He hadn't wanted to leave right away, hadn't wanted to look like he was running away, to be honest, though Din was trying not to think about it, and he'd wanted to keep an eye on Geeta for another few days, too. Din had stayed and lurked around the edges of Fett's court, sparring with Fennec, who'd been more than happy to shoot at Din while he'd tried a few of the Jedi blocks he'd learned from the Holocron with the Darksaber, and taking Geeta home once her shift was over in the evening. Geeta's stalker hadn't made an appearance, but Din had thought that he'd seen something on a second night out with her. Instead of riding beside her to Mos Eisley, Din had hung back a bit, following half a click behind with his engines on its lowest setting. Din had watched the sands. He'd seen a flash in the distance that could have been the moon's reflecting off a pair of binocs or a rifle scope. But when Din had veered off the sand road and gone to investigate, he hadn't found anything. No binocs, no scope, no signs that anyone had been in the ridges at all. On the third night, last night, he had looked again after he'd seen Geeta safe to her mother's house in the quarter, but Din hadn't seen anything at all. It was a puzzle that was beginning to itch underneath Din's Beskar. Geeta was afraid. She didn't want to show it, but Din could see it in her when she thought he wasn't looking. She wasn't inventing sand spirits or spooking at shadows. She was genuinely frightened. "But she's not talking to me," Din thought, picking a direction at random and heading off down the street. He didn't know his way around Mos Entha, but he'd figure it out soon enough. "If she doesn't tell me what she's scared of, what she's already seen, I won't know what I'm up against." Whatever or whoever was hunting Geeta had Nura and Fennec concerned. Neither struck Din as the type to scare easily. Experience told Din that Geeta was afraid of slavers. She'd been a slave in Jabba's palace, in Bib Fortuna's too, once Jabba had died. And though she was free now, and though Fett, Boba, Din reminded himself, still not used to the familiarity that had grown between them, apparently had some carbon to burn with slavery as an institution, that didn't mean that Geeta was safe. Any smart slaver would look at Mos Eisley, with Fett's palace crouched in the distance and Fett's reputation wrapped around it like Beskar, and leave well enough alone. Geeta was one of Fett's people. Boba looked after his own. But intelligence was not a common trait among slavers, Din had found, and greed was a powerful motivator. Geeta was beautiful, graceful. Din had pulled a little more information out of her over the last few days. She'd been trained as a dancer almost from the time she could walk. Her mother, Emiri, had been famous on Ryloth and had been a gift to Jabba by the Empire. All of Emiri's children, Geeta and her brothers and her sisters, had been trained to dance like Emiri. They'd all brought Bib Fortuna quite a bit of money. Geeta was free now, but she could fetch a high price along the Sour Lanes for anybody brave or stupid enough to try and take her. "So is it hunters looking for her? A slaving gang? Old clients of the huts?" Din shook his head, putting thoughts of Geeta aside for now. He couldn't do anything about her problem here. He'd be in Mos Entha for a day or two, most likely. Nura and Fennec were watching out for Geeta in his absence. If anything happened, they'd tell him. He turned his attention back to the city. Mos Entha's orderliness chewed at him. Din liked Mos Eisley's chaos, disorder, and general disrepute. It was easy to hide in Mos Eisley. It was easy to find work, too. And even though the city was usually crawling with scrum rats and lowlifes, it was also full of Din's allies. Din didn't know anyone in Mosentha, and the city was so organized that Din knew the second he set foot inside city limits that he'd have a hard time finding somewhere to lay low. Stealth was out. Din watched Mosentha's residents watch him. He wouldn't be able to move quietly around the city and find his... the covert, he corrected himself, before he could think of any Mandalorian here in Mosentha as his. He didn't even know if there were any Mandalorians here at all. He had no hard intelligence, only rumor and a few sightings of Beskar across the desert. Only hope beating hard in his chest. Making assumptions was dangerous. Din eyed the enormous domes that dominated Mosentha's skyline. Where Mos Eisley rambled and sprawled, most of its buildings hugging close to the earth, Mosentha grew up and up off the ground. Spaceships streamed in and out of the big domes, bound either for the sky or the sands. Mosentha's spaceports charged a higher fee than Mos Eisley's. Din's budget had always been tight enough that he'd taken the risk of getting mugged and touched planetside in Mos Eisley. He could probably spare the credits now and afford to make planetfall here, but Din didn't like the look of the domes. It'd be hard to get out of one of those in a hurry, he thought. Anybody trying to make a quick exit without proper clearance could get trapped inside, the jaws of the dome snapping shut. Proper clearance wasn't always an option in Din's line of work. He'd made his fair share of hasty exits over the years and had been chased up into the black more than once. The rest of the city clung to the edges of the spaceports, connected by wide streets. The streets had their alleys and cuts, like Mos Eisley had, but even those were clean and free of helpful heaps of garbage or piles of scrap that Din could hide in if he needed to. Din could stand at one end of any alley he passed and see clear all the way down to the other. Too exposed. Even Mosentha's people were neater. There were Jawas selling their wares, droids on the street corners, beings of every shape and size going about their business just like they would anywhere else on Tatooine. But the markets were subdued, the Jawas polite, the crowds orderly. Din was going to stand out no matter what he did. Stealth definitely isn't an option. That could be a good thing, Din told himself, already feeling like he had a target painted on his back. He'd only gone a few blocks, but he knew that every step had been observed. His neck prickled. He ignored it. There was nothing Din could do about sticking out, short of shedding his armor and going about barefaced. That will make me feel even more exposed, Din thought wryly. He'd just have to deal with it. With a little luck, word of Din's presence in the city would spread. If there was another covert here, they'd hear about Din and either come looking or let him find them. My own tribe will know me, he thought. None of them knew Din's Mudhorn signet, but he'd earned his full Beskar Gam before the entire tribe. Word of a Mandalorian running around in a full set of silver armor ought to be enough for Din's brothers and sisters to know him. Any other Mandalorians would at least be curious if they heard about Din moving around in Mosentha. If I can't find them, I want them to be able to find me, Din thought. But what I don't want to do is expose them. Din couldn't go poking blindly down alleys or lifting sewer grates. He'd be seen. Somebody would get curious. Din had already exposed one covert. What he'd done on Nevarro had ended in the deaths of many of his brothers and sisters. He wasn't going to expose another and bring the same end down on them, too. So, how do I find them? He wondered. Din aimed himself at the largest spaceport dome and set off against the flow of the crowd. It drew more eyes. The feeling of being watched buzzed underneath Din's Beskar like an angry Kirik fly. But that's all right. Beskar always drew attention, especially when Din didn't bother to try and fade out of sight. When he leaned into it, Din knew that his presence filled the street, caught every eye. Din marked the streets and landmarks as he passed them out of habit. He'd have to spend some time learning the way around if it took longer than a day or two to dig up the others. Din held his head up, reaching for the still, dangerous calm he'd always been able to find on a hunt for the guild on Nevarro. He let Mosentha see what it wanted to see. A Mandalorian bounty hunter, armored and untouchable. With luck, any rival cartels would at least wait to see what Din was up to before having him shot. Din picked up two tails within half a standard hour of leaving the fly. One of them was an adult Rodian with pebbled blue skin, and the other was a human kid, a scruffy girl who was much better at staying out of sight than the Rodian. Din didn't do anything about either tail just yet. He didn't know who they worked for. Just outside the largest spaceport, Din spotted a cantina. It was small, square, and red, a faded sign hanging above the door, and the painted bantha on the sign was chipped and scuffed. The cantina looked almost disheveled next to its orderly neighbors, like a sad old drunk listing sideways on a cantina stool. Perfect, Din thought. He stepped inside, aware of the eyes on his back, and looked around. It was still early enough in the day that the cantina's only residents were the very sad and the very bored. The sad ones were drunk already, nursing sour black tatooine junko or worse, and the bored ones were playing sabac in the corner, the pot just a few dented pegats piled up in the middle of the table. A fleshy male basilisk was minding the bar, using two of his arms to wipe glasses and two to scroll up and down on a badly dented data pad. He didn't notice Din walk in right away, but when silence fell over his already quiet cantina, he looked up and promptly dropped his data pad. "It wasn't me!" Din paused. "Now that's interesting." He was used to other beings marking him out for a hunter at first glance, but usually they didn't start yelling about their perceived innocence quite so early on in their acquaintance with Din. Din took another step inside the cantina and decided to go along with the basilisk's assumption. It might work to help Din set up his cover as a lone bounty hunter looking for a job. If he made a scene where enough beings could see, word of his arrival in Mos Entha would spread more quickly. "That's not what I heard," Din said, his voice flattened out by his helmet. He was aware of the effect the vocoder had on others. It made Din sound mechanical, unfeeling. "In fact, I heard the opposite." He took another menacing step into the cantina, and the basilisk blanched, waving its upper arms. "Varakcha is a liar. Kung, I'd never cheat him. Never. I've turned myself around. I'm a respectable business owner these days. Ask anybody." Din looked around the shabby little cantina. "It looks that way," he agreed. "But I'm not a judge or a magistrate. I'm Murashani." "You can't like working for Varakcha," the basilisk wheedled. "He doesn't... What's he paying you? I'll pay more." Din smiled to himself. That was easy, he thought. He made a show of considering the basilisk's words, aware of the effect his armor had on soft targets like this. The basilisk's knees were shaking. Din took his time. He didn't want to look too easy to bribe. Word of that would spread fast, too. "You got a room I can use for a few days?" Din finally asked. The basilisk stared at him. "A private one," Din added, taking another step forward so that he was within arm's reach of the basilisk. Basilisks were plenty strong as a general rule, but this one had gotten used to the easy life. He was soft around the middle, his arms thick with loose skin instead of muscle. He was staring up at Din with open shock. Din looked significantly towards the open door, where Mos Entha's domes were visible. "One with a good line of sight out, but not a good one in. Think you can help?" The basilisk stared at Din for a few more seconds, then realized what Din was saying and nodded so enthusiastically that the pouch underneath his chin wobbled. "A room? Yeah, I've got a great room. A perfect room for you, Mr. Sir... My..." "Mando is fine," Din said, cutting the basilisk off before he could get himself too excited. "Mando," said the basilisk, thrilled like he and Din had known each other for their entire lives instead of less than 5 minutes. "Yes, yes, a room, a private room. Well, that's your business, yes, but I can help. I'd be happy to help. But..." And the crest on his head drooped, fear returning. "What will Varakcha say when you don't bring me in?" Din shrugged. "That's between me and Varakcha," he said, resolving to leave town before he figured out exactly who that was. Din wasn't planning to stick around for long. Once he'd found the others, once he was sure that they were safe, once he'd gotten some answers, he could disappear back into the desert. "Just don't bring him here," the basilisk muttered. "That one can't walk into a room without breaking stools." He bent to collect his fallen data pad and straightened up. "I'll get you all set up. You won't have to worry about anything while you're here. Stay as long as you need, Mr. Mando." Din inclined his head and let the basilisk scramble off, either to bolt out the back door or go and clean out whatever room he thought Din would like best. Either way, Din was pleased with himself. Someone in the corner of his eye stirred. The thing about wearing a helmet, Din thought, turning his head towards the sabacc game but his eyes towards the being that had moved. is that everyone thinks I can only look in one direction. Din's peripheral vision wasn't spectacular. The helmet did limit his range of vision considerably, but he had enough ability to see out of the corners of his eyes to catch one of the cantina's patrons, a skinny, weather-beaten Weequay who was not half as drunk as he looked, pull a comlink out of his pocket. Din smirked, satisfied. Half of Mos Entha would know where Din was by sunset. The rest would know by dawn. The covert, if they were here, would know that Din was around. They'd know where to find him. And if they didn't, Lady Valerian would. It was a gamble, sitting so boldly out in the open like this. It danced on the edge of stupidity. But sometimes stupid bravery was a good hiding place when other hiding places were thin on the ground. Refuge in audacity, Din's teachers had called it. Din didn't know Mos Entha well enough to go to ground successfully, to hide in the shadows or find safety beneath the streets. But, he thought, I can play being the lone Baroya who's only interested in chasing credits. He'd had years of experience, after all. Either the other Mandalorians would come looking for Din, or Valerian would. The Mandalorians would deal with Din directly. Valerian probably wouldn't, but she could probably be bribed. She would, he hoped, at least want to talk to him before she tried to have him killed. Din would get his answers one way or the other. Now, he thought, prowling over to the game of sabacc in the corner and tossing a few credits of his own into the pot. I just have to wait. Din didn't have to wait very long. He played sabacc for a few hours, amassing a tiny pile of pegats in the open dislike of the rest of the thirsty Banthas patrons for his efforts, and then wandered up to the room the Basilisk, whose name was Rob, had prepared. It wasn't bad for a rush job. Din had a clear view of the main entrance into the spaceport dome. The street-level doors were open now, letting traffic stream into the domes. The suns hadn't quite set yet, and Mos Entha still hummed with its orderly activities. An Amban pulse rifle would stir things up, Din thought. It'd be like putting an Anuba in among the Womp Rats. But that would bring more attention down on Din than he wanted. He wanted the Mandalorians and Valerian to know where to find him. He did not want to get arrested or spend his time running from whatever passed for law enforcement here. Din spent a while securing the room. Rob had done a decent job, but Din had higher standards than the Basilisk. He rigged a few simple traps over the window and under the door, shoved the bed over to position it better in the room, and went through his kit quickly, making sure he'd have what he needed whenever someone, anyone, showed up. His fingers brushed over the smooth surface of the holocron, wedged between a roll of bacta patches and a pair of concussion grenades Din had liberated from Boba's armory. The glass felt warm, even through Din's thick gloves. He'd opened it twice more since the first time. It had been easier to open each time, as if opening it once had shaken up all of the old gears and mechanics inside the thing and loosened all the rest. Din was getting better with the darksaber, too. He still struggled with Kenobi's bloodless form, and he was entirely hopeless at forms 4 and 6, which were too acrobatic and reliant on Jedi powers, but he'd memorized all of Tano's katas and a fair few of Dooku's, too. Fennec had helped. Shooting at Din seemed to brighten her day, and she never aimed for the same place twice, which forced Din to gain some practical skill with the darksaber. She was good at watching and pointing out weaknesses in his forms, too, which helped, and she had a fair bit of close-quarters combat experience, too. Just yesterday, Din had talked her into sparring with him, Fennec armed with a pair of vibro knives and Din with the darksaber. Since Din hadn't wanted to hurt Fennec by accident, their spar had mostly been Din standing still or shuffling through short, stunted versions of the lightsaber forms he'd been learning while Fennec bounced around him with all the dangerous grace of a hunting shriekhawk. Still, it had been educational. Din could have left the holocron behind, but it had made its way into Din's kit for the trip almost without Din realizing. He tucked it in and closed his kit, had gotten halfway down the lift before he'd realized that he had it with him. I just want to keep it safe, Din reasoned. The holocron was important. He'd share it with Skywalker and the other Jedi the next time he went to visit Grogu. He would. As interesting as the Jedi's lightsaber techniques were, they were for Jedi, not Din. He didn't want to leave it behind in the palace where something could happen to it. He shook himself again, scattering his thoughts, and went back downstairs into the cantina proper. More beings had filtered through the cantina as the shadows had deepened across the city. There were a few more sabacc games going now, for bigger pots, though none of the players would meet Din's eyes, afraid he'd join their table, and more patrons at the bar. Rob had all four of his hands full of tatooine junko and spatchka and plates of some kind of fried tuber slathered with a steaming red sauce. The smell turned Din's stomach. He avoided Rob. Din scanned the growing crowd again, looking at individual faces this time, and saw a familiar blue-skinned Brodian pretending to nurse a pint of spatchka at a table in the corner. Din nodded to himself, satisfied. "I've been found," he thought. He took a table to himself, giving the sabacc players a break, and hefted his blaster off his hip. Several patrons flinched. Din ignored them all and began to dismantle his blaster, pulling a rag and some oil out of his kit and going over each and every piece carefully, keeping his head down so that he appeared utterly focused on his task. He had his auditory sensors turned up, though, and his visor angled so that Din could still see the corners of the room. He put his back to the hall leading to the Thirsty Bantha's rooms, keeping the majority of his attention on the front door. The Rodian worked for someone. Now it was just a matter of waiting to see who. Once he'd finished with his blaster, Din reassembled it and started in on his knives. He'd gotten through two vibro knives and had started on his wickedly sharp Verd knife, which he kept in his boot, when the Blue Rodian stood up and cleared his throat. Conversation in the cantina dropped off. Everyone had been keeping half an eye on Din anyway. They knew that the Rodian didn't have business with anyone else. Din slowly, deliberately, looked up. "Mandalorian," said the Rodian, voice high with nerves. Din tilted his head to show the Rodian that he was listening. The Rodian took a deep breath. "Lady Valerian would like to speak with you," he said. "What?" Din said, drawing out the word like he didn't care what the Rodian had said or who he'd named. "Now?" There was a deep, growling snort from the cantina's door. A squat female Wyfid with honey-colored fur and fearsome tusks stood in the doorway, a dented, scuffed old assassin droid standing braced off her hip. The droid's one red eye swiveled, taking in the room. "Yes, Utmian," Lady Valerian said. "Now." She was shorter than the Jedi Kukruk, but wider. Even while shorter than the Wyfid Jedi, she was still taller than Din. Wyfids were big. She didn't have Kukruk's natural grace, but she had a similar presence to him. Wild. Dangerous. Every eye on the room was fixed on her. Din slotted his Verd knife back into his boot. "Please," he said, gesturing at the empty chair on the other side of his table. "Sit. Be my guest." Valerian snorted again, boar-like, and stumped over. "Have manners, do you?" Din shrugged. "When it suits me." "The rest of you, you clear out," Valerian instructed, turning her fierce eyes to the rest of the cantina's patrons. "Robbie, I'll pay you for the missed clink. Hop to now." Din didn't care much for that, to be sitting alone with Valerian and her attack droid in an empty cantina, but there wasn't much he could do about it except draw his blaster and level it at the droid, aimed right at its center chassis. "Fine with me," Din said. He kept his tone even, mechanical. Other beings tended to underestimate Din when they thought him some unfeeling, automated thing. "But I don't like droids. Turn it off." "You think you can order me around, Buki?" Valerian swung her head around, tusks gleaming. "That real Beskar you got on, or just Durasteel?" Din flicked the safety off and cocked his blaster. It whined as it prepared to release a charge. "You're welcome to find out," Din said evenly. Valerian studied him for a moment, then nodded and clapped twice. The droid powered down, slumping over, lights flickering off in its chassis. She eyed the rest of the cantina, which was watching the standoff with bated breath, and snorted again. "Friends," she said, "I believe I asked for privacy." Everyone, even Rob, cleared out, scrambling out of their chairs, overturning drinks, and abandoning their cards in their haste to get to the door. "You're polite for a gangster," Din said. He re-engaged his blaster safety and tucked it back into its holster. He held a hand out, indicating the other chair, and Valerian took it. She moved like a scrapper. Tough, strong, and difficult to put down. "And you're easy to spot for a Mandalorian," Valerian returned, fixing her dark, boar-like eyes on Din's helmet. "You want something." "I could just want work," Din pointed out, tone mild. "Mosantha's a big city. Plenty of work to go around." Valerian grunted. Your kind, she said, stabbing a finger at Dan. Only wants trouble, attention, noise. Kark, I don't want or need in my city right now. Din eyed her finger. I think that someone in your position would like having a Mandalorian or two around, he said. Enterprising business beings almost always do. We appreciate steady work and discretion in our job descriptions. The Wyfid clacked her teeth together, tusks rattling. I've heard, she said, an accusing finger still pointed at Din's chest, that you especially make noise. They talk about you all over Tatooine, Dragonslayer. I know who you are. Friend to Cobb Vanth and Mos Pelgo, and now Boba Fett's favorite hunting beast. His left hand. I don't need Mandalorian hunters, she growled. I've got my own boys, my own hunters. Maybe they work a little slower than your lot, but they do the job, my boys, and don't hold any other loyalty to anyone else besides. I don't need to pay Mando rates for Mando loyalty. Your kind is only loyal to its own. We respect contracts, usually, Din said, ignoring the insult. She'd aimed it at Din, not Fett, so Din was willing to let it pass. A Mandalorian's word is their honor. I wasn't born yesterday. Your honor is your tribe, Valerian sneered. That's why you're here making a spectacle of yourself, isn't it? Din went very still. He narrowed his eyes. Valerian still had a finger aimed at his chest, true as any blaster. Boba Fett, Valerian said shrewdly, leaning across the table. Makes a lot of noise, too. Fine by me if he wants to put one on the Hutt's eye, so long as he keeps to his side of the desert. But that's as far as my indulgence goes. We don't need him around here. Don't need his people sniffing around, not even dangerous young men like yourself. Especially not dangerous young men like yourself or anybody like you. Anybody like me? Din asked, resisting the urge to break Valerian's finger. I can't trust you, Valerian said. Your first loyalty's always to your people, to Fett, not me. Din suppressed a growl of his own. He found himself not liking Valerian, not with her tone of voice, with the way she seemed to think she had all the cards, knew everything there was to know, but respecting her at least a little. Dangerous, she'd called him. She was a gangster and a boss. She'd do her best to put a bolt between Din's eyes if it saved her the credits, the time, or the trouble of dealing with him. And she was under the impression that Din was nothing more than a poorly trained ock-dog running off wherever Fett pointed. Boba didn't even want me to come here, Din thought. Valerian is arrogant. She thinks she knows everything, and she thinks she can intimidate me. But I like her attitude. It took a certain amount of bravery to threaten a Mandalorian. Din could respect that when he saw it, even if he half wanted to throw a punch just to make a point. What, said Din slowly, ordering the cards he had to play in his head, if I said that my employer has no interest in Mos Entha or in this side of the desert? Valerian tilted her head. I'd ask what his favorite Masif is doing sniffing my front door as what? Din ignored the insult again. He'd been called a dog before, usually by targets less than happy to find Din's hand around the back of their neck, pushing them towards his carbonite rig. Valerian's words slid off of Din's Beskar. Maybe my business isn't Fett's at all, Din said. Maybe I'm just following a scent. He wrapped his chest plate gently, the sweet note rising between them. Beskar's got a unique one. Maybe it's a scent I caught out in the desert and followed here. Valerian's gaze sharpened. You looking for other hounds? Din inclined his head. Are they your friends or your enemies? She asked. Din's pulse leapt. There were Mandalorians in Mos Entha, then. Valerian knew of them. He hid his reaction and said, as blandly as he could manage, Does it matter to you? That got another snort. No, Valerian allowed. It doesn't, but if they're your enemies, I'd ask you to do your killing outside my city. I've seen Mandos fight. You lot can level a city block when you get going, and I already pay the watch more credits to look the other way than I should. I'm out of explosives, Din said, but he took her point. He didn't mention the concussion grenades in his kit. He nodded again. I'll keep any disagreements off your territory. You have my word. And you're good for it, are you? You want a character reference? Valerian wuffed, a whiffed laugh. Easy, Buki. I'll take your word. I know where to find you if you break it, don't I? As far as threats went, Valerian's was gentle enough, but Din's spine still stiffened anyway, defensive outrage bridling in his chest. He wasn't the only one who lived in Boba's palace. Valerian wasn't threatening Din alone. She was threatening everyone who lived and worked there. Easy, Valerian repeated, and Din realized that he was reaching for his blaster. He pulled his hand away and left it on the table where she could see it. I don't break my word, Din said. It wasn't true anymore, but Valerian didn't need to know the specifics of the creed. Good, said Valerian. She looked him up and down again. But let's speak plainly, yeah? Strike a good old-fashioned agreement between us. If I help you find your wayward kin, what will you do for me? Keep Boba Fett out of Mos Entha, Din said. He felt only a flicker of guilt about negotiating on Boba's behalf without his knowledge or permission. Boba had already said he had no interest in Mos Entha. He wanted Valerian to help him keep the planet out of the Hutt's slimy hands. He wanted her to be Naru-Dad, an enemy of his enemy. You can make that promise. Din nodded. I can, he said. Boba Fett's left hand, remember? Valerian looked at him for a long moment, then clacked her teeth together and said, No Mandos have come to me looking for work, but there's a few been seen around, three I know of. Two about your size and armor that's all black, and one a good bit bigger than you in gray and blue. Din froze. How much bigger? Do I look like I measure every Mandalorian who sets foot in my city? Big, Buki. Big enough to notice, anyway. Heavily armored and heavily armed. Looked like he was about ready to storm an Imperial hub, not wander around Tatooine like a lost tourist. Pause, Din thought. He knew that it could be someone else. There were other Mandalorians in blue-gray armor. There were. Din had seen them, met them. Paz had chosen the colors of his armor to honor the warriors who'd adopted him. They'd had families scattered throughout all of the covert, so the colors were common. But Din wanted it to be Paz. Where? All over, Valerian said. Though they've stayed away from me. A cantina called the Red Crate on the other side of the city, the slums, one was seen in the market 3 days ago. The big one's been seen in the domes, visiting a few of my competitors, though not in the last few days. Taking work. Paz wasn't Baroya, but he was capable. He could find work if he had to. But the warriors of the covert only ever went out one at a time. If Paz was working, the others should be staying out of sight, minding the foundlings, watching the forge, training. Din didn't know who the others could be, either. Annika had worn red armor, like Din had before his current set. There'd been Beskar of almost every color in the covert. Several others had painted their armor with black symbols or black accents, but no one had worn just black. Did Paz find others? Had another covert stepped in to shelter what was left of Din's? Din pulled his thoughts away and focused on Valerian. Wild thoughts wouldn't help anyone, least of all the covert. Where was the most recent sighting? When? Near the Red Crate, Valerian said. 2 days ago, I've had some of mine watching it. Who owns the Red Crate? No one, said Valerian. She grinned at Din, showing off her tusks. It used to be the Hutts back in the day, but not anymore. They all ran when Jabba fell. It's abandoned? She nodded. An abandoned Hut operation, Din thought, putting it all together. There'll be smuggler's tunnels. The Hutts dealt in every illegal substance known to the galaxy, and a few experimental ones, too. They ran blasters and spice and slaves, stolen ships, exotic animals. They'd have tunnels to avoid the city's law enforcement, or the Imperials, or their rivals. Probably ones that ran either out into the desert, where smugglers could load their cargo away from prying eyes, or to one of the spaceports. A jolt of excitement went through Din. He tried not to show it. He didn't trust Valerian as far as he could throw her, and Din was down to just one good arm. I don't want to lead her to them. 2 days might as well be 2 years, Din observed. Things change fast on Tatooine. Valerian barked a laugh. Things never change on Tatooine. Din wished he could express his frustration without giving away the whole game to Valerian. He wasn't particularly good at subterfuge, but he could at least try. Mandalorians don't stay in one place for long, then, he tried. We're nomads. You got anything fresher? The Wyfid shook her head. No, she said. These others, they don't stick out half as bad as you. Din shrugged. I'm just a visitor, he said. Don't have a reason to hide. Valerian raised her finger again. Whether or not she believed him was impossible to say, but she'd apparently reached the end of her patience and her willingness to help Din out. Keep Boba Fett out of my business, Mando, she instructed. And I'll even let you leave here in one piece with all that pretty expensive armor still attached. You can take the others with you or put them down, but I don't want Mandos in my city. Understand? Din bristled at the way Valerian spoke about the others, like they were womp rats scurrying around in the dark, stealing scraps, or Urusai who'd made themselves pests. But he nodded curtly. Fine, he said. You've got till the sun's come up in the morning, Valerian said, her friendliness apparently exhausted. Then I don't want to see so much as a glint of the sun shining off that armor of yours, or any other Mandalorians, okay? Next Mandalorian I see, I'm shooting. Din inclined his head. His pulse began to race, half a dozen plans formed and discarded before Valerian even stood up. He didn't have much time. He could see the darkness beginning to gather outside, the sun sinking low in the sky. Take that Wookiee with you, too, Valerian added, standing with a grunt. She gestured sharply at her droid, which came back to life at her command. Its eyes flickered and adjusted. I like Wookiees better than I like Mandalorians, but that doesn't mean I want any around. If I see a Wookiee, I will let them know, Din said. Internally, he groaned. He hadn't known that Kasik was in the city. Someone at the palace, either Bobo or Fennec, must have sent him along after Din to keep an eye on him. I don't need a minder, Din thought, a bubble of irritation forming underneath the part of his mind that was already working angles, trying to figure out a plan of attack. Valerian chuckled. Good day, Wookiee, she said. The suns are starting to set. Happy hunting, eh? And pass on my thanks to your master. Bib Fortuna was almost worse than the old worm. It was a nice bit of work Fett did getting rid of him. She left. Din switched his visor over to thermal imaging and watched her through the walls. She lingered outside the door for a moment, talking to her droid, and then they both waddled away, disappearing around the corner into the red, warm mass of Mos Entha's evening traffic. Once he was sure that she was gone, Din sighed. Great, he thought. Now I have to find a Wookiee. Fortunately, Din didn't have to go very far. Wookiees ran hot, much hotter than humans, so Din kept his thermal imaging on and stepped out the cantina's front door, scanning the line of buildings across the street. A 2.5-meter band of white-orange light tucked away at the top of a 2- or 3-story building across the street caught Din's eye. Din waved. Caught out, the shape, Kasik, waved back. Din went back inside. None of the cantina's patrons had returned, so Din released the seal on his helmet and pulled it up enough that he could swipe a drink from behind the bar. Tatooine Junko was hot wine, sour and dark, but Din had tried Bogonaga before, a lighter ale made from fermented naga seeds, and didn't mind the taste. He threw a few credits behind the bar for Rob to cover the expense and pulled his helmet back down, then turned to wait for the Wookiee. Kasik appeared in the doorway after a few minutes, enormous and almost more conspicuous than Din. Wookiees had gotten pretty common on Tatooine during the Empire's day. The Empire had pillaged Kashyyyk and sold its people off all over the galaxy, and Tatooine, like most other systems along the Saurlands, had ended up with a fair few. But Kasik didn't move like a slave. He moved like a fighter, proud and fierce, and he stood a full meter above most of Tatooine's native inhabitants. He stuck out. Kasik rumbled a sheepish greeting, pausing in the doorway, then crossed the room once he decided that Din wouldn't shoot him. Din eyed him. He looked good. Most of his fur had grown back in from his encounter with the Hutt assassins, and he'd done a decent job following Din from Mos Entha. Din hadn't seen him following behind across the desert or tailing Din in the city anyway, and it was hard for someone to tail Din without Din noticing. He'd picked up on the Rodian and the kid, after all. Fett send you? Din asked sourly. If it wasn't Boba, it was Fennec. Din tried not to bristle. He understood the concept of backup, but he didn't need it. Not for this. Kasik warbled an affirmative. Din sighed. I don't need a minder, he said. Boss disagrees, Kasik replied cheerfully. Din pushed his helmet back into his face, visor digging into his nose, the pressure grounding him. A headache was beginning to build behind his eyes. He should have paid more attention when he lived on Kashyyyk. Din's Shiriwook was rough at best. You don't need a minder, maybe, Kasik continued. He had a Kashyyyki lowlands accent, slower than a highlands or deep forest Wookiee. But could you use a friend? Are we friends now? Din muttered. Kasik patted his shoulder. There's nothing for it, is there? Kasik wouldn't take orders from Din, and it was nearly impossible to order a Wookiee to do anything anyway. If Kasik had decided to do what Boba had asked of him, he wouldn't change his mind for anything Din said. Zero's looking out for Gita while you're gone, Kasik said. That made Din soften a little. Kasik was just doing his job, and Boba, well, Din could be annoyed with Boba later, once he was outside of Mos Entha. Good, said Din. Any idea who's been following her? Kasik shook his head. We're looking, he said. Any luck finding your clan? Wookiees were just as tribe-oriented as Mandalorians, and most of the Wookiees still alive had lost their tribes at one point or another. Kasik's concern was genuine. Din shook his head. No, he said, but I'm not looking too hard, and I've only been here half a day. Why not? I don't want to lead an enemy to them by mistake, Din said. I don't know Mos Entha very well. Do you? Kasik shrugged. Helpful. The faint growl he got in return reminded Din to watch his mouth. Wookiees were just as easily offended as Mandalorians, too, and Wookiees were big. Din had seen a Wookiee put a grown man through a wall and tear the arms off a droid with ease. Are you here to help or just to watch my back? Din asked, looking Kasik up and down. Mostly to watch your back, Kasik said. But I can help. Din nodded to himself, thinking. He had until dawn to find the other Mandalorians and get them out of the city. He needed to move fast. A good bit of time might be taken up convincing them to leave. If there was a covert established here, they might not want to go. Valerian's threats could just be an insult. They might not care what Din had promised. And when they found out that Din was Darmanda, even if it was the remnants of his own covert, I can't worry about that. Din would have to handle the covert when he found them. If he stopped to consider every scenario, every reaction, he'd never get anything done. Din shoved aside his fear and made himself refocus. Kasik had offered to help. Wookiees were useful, weren't they? I have a lead, Din said. Valerian told me where to start looking, on the condition that we're all gone by morning. You need my help finding it? Maybe, Din said. He wanted to get to this other cantina, this red crate, and take a look at it before he committed to a plan. The other Mandalorians, you're an outsider. They'll want to avoid you. But I can't lead Valerian to them, or anyone else, so... We split up? Kasik suggested. Din shook his head. Not at first, he said. Come with me. We'll check out Valerian's lead. If it pans out, I might need you to create a distraction. Kasik rumbled, and it sounded like laughter. I can make a distraction, he said. What's this lead? A sighting, Din said. 2 days ago, across the city. At an abandoned cantina called the Red Crate. Heard of it? Kasik shook his head. Me neither. Valerian said it used to be a hut operation before Jabba died. She says it's abandoned now. A lot of places are abandoned now, Kasik observed. Is Valerian telling the truth? I guess we'll see, Din muttered. He pressed his helmet back one more time, the rigid planes of it digging into his nose, then let go. Come on, we've got a long night ahead of us. Kasik made a noise of agreement and finished off Din's Bogonaga. They set off together. Kasik had a speeder nearby, which Din climbed into. He let Kasik drive. They cut across Mos Entha, ignoring the traffic patterns in favor of speed. Kasik was a good pilot. The outer edges of Mos Entha, away from the shadows of the spaceport domes, were a little bit more familiar to Din and Kasik both. The buildings were shabbier, the streets a little more crooked, the locals a little less tidy and a little more suspicious. The red crate, when they found it, was thoroughly abandoned. Its sign had faded in the suns, leaving only the faint outline of a crate dragon roaring at the sky. The Orabesh characters underneath the sign were chipped. The red crate wasn't falling down into disrepair or sagging on its foundations. Din was starting to suspect that Mos Entha had an entire civil service dedicated to keeping everything tidy, but it was shabbier than anything around it, its walls discolored and pocked by wind and Kyrick flies. It was taller than most of its neighbors, 5 or 6 stories, and made of banded red stone. It had the same rounded windows and doorways as most buildings on Tatooine, almost cave-like, but all of the Red Crate's windows were boarded up by rust-flecked durasteel, and the door, also durasteel, was tightly welded shut. "But I'm in the right place," Din thought. The Red Crate sat at an intersection between 2 roads, busy enough that in its day patrons would have trickled into the cantina and provided the veneer of legitimate business, but not so busy that the hot cartel operators would have drawn too much attention moving illegal goods, especially not at night. The suns had fallen away by the time Din and Kasik found the Red Crate. It was still early enough in the evening that Mos Entha still buzzed, lit up by warm cantina light and glowing street lamps instead of the sun, but traffic in the streets was thinning out. Din swept his gaze over the building, thermal imaging back on. He didn't see any signs of life beyond small, dull red lumps that moved around the first floor of the old cantina. Womp rats. Din didn't see anything else, not even flickers of heat that might mark a droid's whirring processors. There were beings out in the galaxy that wouldn't show up on Din's scans. Trandoshans and many other reptilian species ran cold, but there weren't any humans or warm-blooded sentients lingering around that Din could see. "Valerian didn't set me up. She must be worried that Bubba will turn his attention here next." Valerian was trying to solve several problems at once. Get rid of any Mandalorians in the city. Mandalorians with no loyalty for Valerian, who might accept a contract on her life. And strike a deal with Boba Fett, too. Tidy, Din thought. It was too tidy, like the rest of Mos Entha. He gritted his teeth. He didn't like it. He felt like he was missing something. But there wasn't anything he could do about it except get on with it, so Din directed Kasik to park the speeder. They checked corners and angles, searching for sniper's nests or any unwanted eyes, and when the coast was clear, they went up to the red crate and tried the front door first. Kasik stayed back and waited. Din wrapped a hand around the door handle and pulled. It was stuck tight. Locked, welded, and probably barricaded from the inside. A quick check of the windows on the ground floor told the same story. The sheets of metal covering all of the window ports were solid durasteel, welded into the building. Din beckoned Kasik over and went around the red crate's back, counting on shadows and the late hour to hide him from view. Kasik joined him and rumbled a question. "It's all bottled up tight," Din reported. He looked up. The windows on the higher floors looked the same. I guess even once they bolted, the huts didn't want anybody creeping around in there. "So if this is where your Mandos have been spotted," Kasik rumbled, "how are they getting in?" Din craned his head back. He could just barely see the lip of the roof. "Kasik," he started, "you a good climber?" Like most buildings on Tatooine, the Red Crate had been built out of local stone. And Tatooine's sandstone, while sturdy and solid, wasn't smooth. Climbing without gear up a glass and metal building on a mid-rim world was nearly impossible. Climbing up a sandstone building on Tatooine was hard, but not impossible. The Red Crate's walls were pitted and scarred, worn out by the wind, by Kyrick flies, by ancient rain. There were plenty of hand and footholds to hang on to. Wookiees were excellent climbers. They had to be. Their entire world was a dense jungle, and they worshipped the Rushir trees. Climbing a Rushir was as natural to a Wookiee as breathing. Kasik went up foot over paw without much effort at all. Din wasn't as fast as Kasik, but he managed. He would have preferred his jetpack, but didn't want the noise and the light to draw any more eyes than he already had on him. His right arm trembled under the strain, his fingertips shaking, the pins in his arm throbbing, but Din managed it. Kasik beat him to the top, of course, and hooked a paw underneath Din's armpit to haul him the rest of the way. The grip jostled Din's mostly healed bruise. He bit back a quiet hiss and shrugged out of Kasik's grip as soon as he was upright. "You think your friends climb up here to get in?" I don't know if they're my friends, Din said, looking around. But it's climb up or go under. Scaling 6 stories wasn't that hard if you had the right equipment. A powered grappling hook and a winch would do the trick, or even a decent set of climbing gear. But getting up here did take some effort, and in Din's experience, half of the galaxy wouldn't bother. The other half almost never thought to look up. Rooftops were almost always a safe way to travel. Din's visor flickered as he looked around, revealing traces, disturbed patches of dust and sand, fresh marks in the stone. There, said Din softly. There was a door at one end of the roof, a service entrance or an emergency exit. The roof was flat enough to hold a speeder or even a small ship if it had to. Old carbon burns ground into the sun-bleached stone told Din that a speeder had been up here a time or two, though none of the burns were fresh. The door, though, had been disturbed recently. The dented sheet of durasteel that had been welded shut, probably when the Huts had abandoned the cantina, had been hacked loose. The welds had been cut. The door was still closed, but the angle of it was wrong. It wasn't hinged to the wall or the roof anymore, just cleverly propped up to look like it was. Kasik rumbled again and padded forward, reaching for the door, but Din caught his arm. He shook his head. Let me, Din said. He took the durasteel sheet by one side and shifted it over instead of pulling it back. Moving the metal that way let Din see the thin black wire connected to the back of the door and running to the opposite wall. Opening the door normally would have snapped the wire. Din pointed at it. Kasik froze. Trapped? He asked. Not offensively, Din assured him. Not yet, anyway. Trapping doors to explode, or worse, this far out from the covert itself, would only draw attention. It's an alert wire. It's a simple circuit wired to a receiver. If the wire snaps, the circuit breaks, the receiver dies, and whoever's on the other end is alerted. Then someone comes to investigate. Din slid the sheet of durasteel over just enough to edge his way through it, ducking so he didn't break the wire with his helmet, and then he flattened himself against the wall so Kasik could shuffle in after him. So your people are close, then, he asked, catching on. Din's pulse was racing again, adrenaline beginning to prickle in his fingertips. Someone was close. The alarm wire was rudimentary. It could have been set by a covert because the technique was easy to learn and pass along, but it could also have been set up by any group looking to keep something hidden. It could even have been a leftover from the Hunt's operation. But Mandalorians were seen here, Din thought. A big one in blue and gray armor. Yes, Din said. Now, be quiet. This won't be the only safeguard. Kasik, to his credit, was a competent hunter. He wasn't as good as Din, or even as good as some of the other Baroia Din had met and learned from. But he knew what he was doing, and he moved very carefully, despite his size. And he didn't argue when Din took the lead and began to clear the abandoned cantina room by room and floor by floor. The Mandalorians. Beings, Din corrected, trying desperately not to get his hopes up. Hadn't touched the top 3 floors. The rooms were all abandoned, full of dust and debris. The walls were scored with old blaster fire and other discolorations. Din got the impression that the Huts hadn't left peacefully. On the 4th floor down, the 3rd up from the streets, Din found another alarm wire, this one hidden along a seam of cracked and crumbled tile. He and Kasik both avoided it. The 1st floor, the abandoned bar and dance floor, the gambling dens and dingy rooms where the operation had conducted its business, had been disturbed more recently. Old chairs and tables had been dragged in front of the windows and doors to reinforce the durasteel boarding them up, and a 3rd alarm wire had been stretched at chest height across a door leading into what looked like, once Din had dropped to his knees and shuffled past the wire, a kitchen. Din activated his thermal imaging again and swept the room, looking both around himself and beneath his feet. He still wasn't picking up anything bigger or warmer than Womp Rats. The tunnels it is. Din turned to Kasik. All right, Din said. Imagine you're a gangster working for Gorga the Hutt. Where do you hide a secret entrance into tunnels under the city? Kasik looked around, making a rough, thoughtful noise in his throat. His gaze settled on a large, cavernous room that yawned black past the end of the kitchen. A meat locker, if Din had to guess. Keeping meat fresh on Tatooine was always a challenge. Din nodded. Kasik's guess was as good as any. He went in first, a hand on his blaster. The meat locker, and it was a meat locker, complete with long-dead, half-scavenged refrigeration coils and hooks that hung from the ceiling, which Din gingerly avoided, was empty now, of course. The lackeys running the operation had taken whatever had been here, meat or spice or worse, with them when they fled. Din reached the center of the room and turned around in a slow circle, switching the thermal imaging off so he could use his own eyes. There was nothing left in the locker, nothing but what looked like a large womp rat next to a few abandoned wooden boards scattered across the floor. But there was a lower level. Din could see rats moving beneath the floor when he switched back over to thermal. He looked at the old boards again. Well, he thought, can't hurt, can it? He crouched down and pulled the boards aside one by one, making sure to feel under each edge for an alarm wire. He didn't find any, but once all the boards had been cleared away, Din found himself looking at an old, discolored trapdoor speckled with rust. But the hinges are clean. They were better than clean, even. The rest of the trapdoor had grown a splotchy coat of red rust, but the hinges shone with oil. Found them? Kasik asked. Not yet, Din murmured, feeling around the hinges too. He found nothing. But we're close. Remember that distraction? Din looked up at the Wookiee, whose dark fur was nearly invisible in the gloom. Kasik nodded. I need it now, he said. Away from here, a few blocks at least. Something loud and messy. Get as much attention off this cantina as you can, and then run for it. Valerian gave us both until dawn to get us out of here. Take your own speeder, or meet me at my ship. It's the Hawk 290 at Katuni Shipyard. You know where that is? Kasik made a sharp, unhappy noise of disagreement. Din looked up at him. My people don't like outsiders, he said. And I might not know these Mandalorians personally. If they see you, they might start shooting, even if I'm with you. I was told to keep you safe, Kasik returned. Din resisted the urge to shove his helmet back into his nose again. I know, he said. And I get that. Disobeying Bobo was difficult. But if they start shooting at you, and you're behind me. Kasik growled, plainly unhappy, but seemed to realize that Din wouldn't budge, not on this. If you're killed, I'm as good as dead, he said. The boss is fond of you. And he knows me, too, said Din. If anything happens, just tell him I'm too Atinish. Too stubborn. Thet knew Din by now. He knew that Din would protect the covert, that Din would do this his own way. Kasik grumbled, still not pleased, but finally nodded. Fine, he said. I'll give you a distraction. Be safe. I'll meet you at Katuni's in half an hour. Din nodded. Be safe, he echoed. Kasik did as he was asked and left Din alone. The second he heard Kasik pass into the hall, Din took the trapdoor's handle and pulled. It opened smoothly and quietly. A set of dingy stairs lay underneath the trapdoor and led down into darkness. Din took a few seconds to focus, mastering his heart rate, his mingled excitement and dread. Then he stood up and slipped down the stairs into a low-hanging tunnel, closing the door behind him. The darkness was nearly absolute. Din had just enough light to see by, gaps in the tunnel ceiling that let moon and streetlight stream in and pricks and shafts, when he switched his visor over to night vision. But only just. He took a steadying breath. This is it. He resisted the urge to draw the darksaber, if only to shed more light down the tunnel, and made himself start walking. Din was past caring about setting off alarm wires now. Anything he tripped would register as close, too close for the covert to run. If he tripped anything, they would meet him and fight instead, and once they realized that Din was in Beskar too, they would stop and Din could identify himself. Hopefully, he thought. The problems he'd ignored earlier were pressing up against him now, warm and alive. What if I don't know them? What if I do? What if it is Paz and I have to tell him that I broke the creed? Din and Paz had been close as children, but a distance had grown between them once Din left the covert to start hunting. Paz had called Din a coward in front of the whole tribe. Paz had tried to take Din's helmet off. They would have come to blows over it if the Allure hadn't stepped in. What will he say when I tell him? Din had to tell him. He couldn't hide the truth, not from Paz. Din had broken the creed. He'd shown his face. Din's dread was mounting. He wrestled it down. Paz will try to kill me, Din thought. Paz would probably even consider it a mercy. He'd kill Din to spare him from more dishonor, from the rest of the tribe's retribution. He'll have a fight on his hands. Din didn't want to die. He had the kid to look after. The Jedi. He had a holocron to deliver. He was still sworn to Kreese's quest. And if I died, it would upset Boba, Din realized. It sparked behind his eyes like a bolt of blaster fire, bright and hot. Din smothered it, startled. Boba would be upset if Din died, and it would be beyond the regret of an employer losing a skilled employee. He'd sent Kasik after Din with the order to keep Din safe. He would mourn me as a friend. The thought echoed through Din's head like struck Beskar, a sound that rose and rose. He didn't know what to do with it. Now isn't the time. He dragged his mind away with a tremendous effort. He made himself slow down and check his armor's internal controls. Everything was in working order. The Beskar should hold up to anything short of a pulse rifle at close quarters. As Din went, moving carefully, he turned his head from side to side to check for anything that might give him a clue as to where the covert was hiding. Supply crates, branching tunnels that were blocked off or cleared out, fresh blaster marks, the lingering smell of smoke, or even a mythosaur skull mounted above a doorway. But he didn't see anything. The tunnels branched off a few times, but two branches were dead ends, and one was entirely blocked off by a heap of clinging wet clay. There's a spring down here, Din thought. He gave the clay a careful berth. Tatooine didn't have much water, but what it did have could nourish sinkholes and clay slicks that could catch and trap a bantha, let alone a lone man. Beskar was heavy. If Din fell into a clay slick, he would have a hard time getting back out again. Din walked for another 2 or 3 minutes, keenly aware of the limited time he had, when he saw something out of the corner of his eye and paused. The tunnel branched again, and this time, marked on the fork in bright white paint, armor paint, was a word written in Arabesh characters. Yaim, the word said. Din didn't know much Mandalorian, but he knew that word. They had all learned it growing up. They'd all been taught to recognize it, painted on walls or rocks or scraps of wood, hidden in plain sight. Yaim was home. A covert. A safe place. Din had found them. Hello? He called, his voice echoing in the darkness. The echo sounded thin. Din forced himself to take a deep breath. Hello? He called again. I am... a brother, he said, unable to make himself say the right words to say a Mandalorian. From the covert on Navarro. His voice echoed back to him without a response. Din took a deep breath and took a step into the tunnel marked as Yaim. He didn't immediately get shot, which he took as a good sign, so Din edged a little further down the tunnel and called out again. But no one answered. Anticipation thrumming, Din took the last few steps quickly, wrapping a hand around the shaft of his spear so he could draw it if he needed. I'm a brother, Din repeated. I'm not here to hurt anyone. The tunnel ended abruptly in a small cave-like room, and the room was empty. Din took in several details at once, overturned crates, but no blaster marks. The ashes of a campfire, a few discarded and chipped plates, scattered ration wrappers, a fistful of makeshift beds. There were 6 beds, Din noted, even as he swept his gaze over the rest of the room. 3 were large enough to fit adults. The other 3 were almost pitifully small. Children, Din realized. There were children here. He let go of his spear. There were no threats here. There was nothing. This wasn't a covert. Something sharp and bitter had lodged itself in his chest. There was no forge, no mythosaur skull mounted to mark the Allura's quarters. There wasn't a kitchen or an armory. This was a hiding place. A refuge, yes, but a hasty, temporary one. Din had misunderstood. Kark, he said quietly. He'd made a mistake. He should have come as soon as he'd heard Ushek say that Mandalorians had been seen in Mos Entha. This wasn't a covert, strong and safe. This had been Din's people, Paz, foundlings, in desperate need of help. Where did they go? Din whirled around, pulse hammering again. The hiding place had been abandoned in a hurry, but despite the disarray, there were no signs of violence, no blaster marks, no dead bodies, no bloodstains. There had been warriors here, at least three. The blue warrior and two in black. Adult warriors would have defended the foundlings to their deaths. But there were no bodies. That made Din calm down enough to take a closer look, pacing the whole length of the miserable little room. The tunnel had been emptied out in a hurry, but aside from wrappers and plates and blankets, non-essential things that could be replaced, everything had been packed out. Weapons, any medical gear, armor. They had some time to pack up, at least. That was a good sign. That, combined with the lack of obvious violence, made hope flicker again in Din's chest. Maybe they moved because they knew they'd been seen. Valerian had known where to start looking, after all. If the warriors had felt exposed, they would have moved the foundlings to protect them. But where did they go? Din couldn't find any indication of where they might have planned to go. Tatooine was enormous, the galaxy sprawling. The Mandalorians had a head start. No, Din thought, catching himself before he could let his thoughts run too far ahead. He was Baroia. He could find them. Din doubted that the grown warriors had made children rappel off the sides of the building, especially if the covert had tried to leave in a hurry. The last sighting had been of just one adult Mandalorian, not three with foundlings. The little band, when it had left, hadn't been seen. That ruled out the use of jetpacks, too. Jetpacks were loud. The tunnels, Din thought. They must have used the tunnels. Determined, Din swept over the little den one more time, making sure he hadn't missed a sign or a clue, then went back out in the tunnels and set off, moving further and further away from the red crate. The tunnels weren't in good shape. Valerian clearly hadn't taken them over after she'd run the hut operation off. Din found a few more exits that worked, a door that opened into a storage facility, rows and rows of crates and boxes. Another that led to a room full of dancers' clothes, a third that opened into an alley behind a row of tidy homes, but none that he thought a Mandalorian would use. Paz, Din thought to himself. He was sure that the blue and gray warrior was Paz. Paz wouldn't use any of those, not if he had kids with him. Paz had always taken the safety of foundlings very seriously. He'd had to. He almost never left the covert, except when Jobs needed a heavy hitter. Din was the hunter. Paz was the protector. He would choose something out of the way, someplace that wouldn't be seen. Din went back to the tunnels and kept going. Finally, the tunnel sloped upwards and came to an end at another trapdoor. The hinges, like the ones in the red crate, had been recently oiled. Din pushed them, and they opened. He didn't care about setting off an alarm wire now. Din was in the desert. The tunnel opened up behind a large red rock. Macentha was only a few hundred yards away, but the cover was good. If they'd come out at night, they could have slipped away into the sands without anyone catching them. Din stared out across the empty sands. The wind had long since wiped away any traces of the other Mandalorians. They could have gone anywhere from here. Behind Din, sirens and lights were flashing across the city. Kasik's distraction, he thought. Din turned away. Without a heading or some tracks, there was no way to track the others. Din had lost them. He was due to meet up with Kasik soon, anyway. It was time to leave. Pause, he thought, mind turning. Where are you going? There was no time for black desperation, not now. There was no time to let the feeling of failure build, let it paralyze Din, let it keep him from getting out of the city. The Mandalorians were gone. There was nothing Din could do about that now. He'd waited too long, and now he had to take the consequences. Now he had to keep looking, and to do that, he needed... I need to get out of Macentha, Din thought. I need to get away from Lady Valerian. Din made it back to the fly without running into Valerian's people or any law enforcement. Kasik was waiting for him, tucked underneath one of the fly's landing struts. He called a soft greeting. That was fast, Kasik observed. There was smoke rising in the distance, the leftovers from Kasik's distraction. Din hoped the Mandalorians were out of the city now. It wouldn't be safe for them, not after this. Did you find them, your people? No, Din said, jaw working. I was too late.